Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, we are on Zoom. How about that?
We are.
This is fun. Hopefully, Skype kept crashing my computer, so hopefully, I'm really hoping that Skype isn't a corporate partner. But so far, so good here on Zoom. Today's hypothetical question, I'm kind of curious. Today's going to be a mailbag show, so we're probably going to have a couple more hypothetical questions here. But today's hypothetical question here is, have you been watching the MJ doc?
Yeah, I watched the first two episodes.
What has been your main takeaway there? Not really a hypothetical question, more of just like an actual question. But how are you feeling about this doc so far?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely produced by the Church of Jordan, right? Like, it's very, there are some parts where I'm like, yeah, it's kind of how it went, but there's some,
everybody was doing cocaine except for me.
Yeah. No, not I. Hold on. Let me take drinking this scotch. It's delicious. Me,
what
I don't do stuff
what
like
is
that,
cocaine? Right? What is this? Yeah. I never even watched Scarface.
Right. He says in his all white living room. It's definitely produced by the Church of Jordan. I thought it was funny. Ramona Shelburne reported that MJ finally okayed the production of this after many, many years, the day that LeBron won his title. Perhaps his legacy is feeling a little threatened. Now, I really enjoy it. For one, just on a pure like, oh crap, something new basketball wise to talk about, and I will take it. Right, like it's really well produced. It's fun seeing Jordan tell his story in his own words. To see Phil Jackson involved, Scottie Pippen, they did a little bit about him. And then it's the whole notion of them breaking up that team is really what stood out to me, is that idea that, you know, a lot of times in very successful endeavors, everybody wants credit. And Jerry Krause,
Kerr's the disease of me, right? That was right, that's where this came from.
Yeah. And Krause being like, you know, this is going to be Phil's last year as a coach. I don't care if he wins 82 games. Like, what? You don't care if he wins 82 games? Like, okay. You should care. And then just the whole, you know, organizations win championships, not players. It was just like completely unnecessary. And it's not, I don't think it's a surprise that the Bulls, with that mentality, with still the same owner and Jerry Reinsdorf, who's in it, Jerry Krause passed away a couple of years ago. But with all of that, it's no surprise that the Bulls have been kind of a damn mess since then.
Yeah.
And their decision making, and they just haven't been really in touch with what the NBA is, with Jim Boylan as their coach. It just very much painted the picture of an out of touch management. And, you know, you see the fruit of that. That said, like Jordan, David Chia had a great tweet today. He said, Jordan answers the hypothetical question of like, what would it be like if you dropped a modern athlete into the 1980s, and it was fun to watch young Jordan and see how similar he was to Kobe, right? And how, because we always see championship Jordan, right? But that like 1987 Jordan was like, oh yeah, you can kind of see kind of 19 or 99 Kobe or something like that. So it was just cool to see, you know, to relive Jordan. I lived through that. I know you lived through some of it as well. And then just see just how much of an influence he had on Kobe.
The thing I kind of walked away from it was, and I told the story on Twitter really quickly, and then but it really, and again, like, this is the guy telling the story in his words, right? So he's going to come off looking as good as he can. But this dude epitomized cool. Mm-hmm. He was so fucking cool. He was like, he was cool in a way that seemed completely effortless. Like, Kobe became cool because initially he was trying to be Jordan. And then I thought like Kobe's cool went to another level when he was just like, no, screw it, I'm going to be me. Right. Sure. And I think that's kind of my takeaway here from this Jordan thing. It's like, if you're going to reach that level of cool, and everybody kind of thinks of Jordan nowadays as like baggy jeans guy, you know, like this kind of goofy owner who like doesn't understand like how to put together a team, drafted Kwame Brown, you know, all those things. But in his heyday, he was like the, when you thought cool, he was the guy you thought of in the NBA.
Oh, and, absolutely.
And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that like, he was just him, you know? Mm-hmm. And I kind of feel like in this post playing career era of his life, he's trying to find that kind of security again with himself, I think. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's why you see him going back and trying to rewrite this chapter of his life and kind of update it, you know, now that you have guys kind of, you know, LeBron is becoming a peer. Kobe at one point was a peer, you know, in terms of success and stuff. And I think, you know, the fact that he's really searching out this, you know, level of coolness makes him really interesting to me. Cause I don't know if that's a level that he can actually get to again, but watching him try is kind of, is probably going to be fun.
Yeah. That's it. You can always see with Jordan, just the ultimate belief in himself, and Kobe had that too. But I think that that's where a lot of his cool emanated from, right? It's this combination of complete and total belief in himself and insane work ethic and God-given talent, right? Yeah. All kind of converging. Yeah, you're right. He can never be as cool as he was as a player, but few people ever doing anything were as cool as,
like, nobody will ever be
as Michael Jordan was as a player. Like, there's a reason why people were described as the Michael Jordan of fill in the blank of their respective industry, right? Like,
yeah,
he was kind of the pinnacle of that, especially at the time.
Yeah, yeah. We actually got a question here from Twitter, since we're kind of on the topic anyway. Mike Garcia at Canyon Driver writes, how has MJ influenced the way you see basketball from the 90s to now?
Ooh, that's a good question. It's so much more of a wing league. I feel like Jordan ushered in the wing era of basketball. When Jordan was trying to win his first title, the conventional wisdom was that you couldn't do it without a dominant or really, really good big man as kind of the centerpiece of your offense. Mm-hmm. And Jordan ushered that in. So I think of, you know, today's game is the best thing you can have is a two-way wing, a dominant two-way wing. And Jordan and Pippen on top of that, I think that they kind of illustrated exactly why. They exposed kind of a fundamental truth about basketball, which is that those guys that can do a little bit of everything, that are big enough to where they can't get physically overwhelmed by anybody,
yeah,
but not so big as to not be able to attack with speed, that those guys in between are the most valuable guys that you can have. So that was my takeaway. How about you?
It's so fascinating, now that you kind of put it that way, that the greatest player ever played a position that immediately got devalued, basically, like right after his career, because like Shaq came around and then Duncan came around. And those guys were the people who we thought was necessary to win championships in the NBA. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as soon as those guys were removed from the league, when as soon as those guys retired, you started to see the era of wings, LeBron, sure, Kawhi, Durant, you know, and I don't think there's ever any going back, but yeah, it's interesting that, you know, how the league kind of changed even while, or how the league reverted back to what we thought was important in the 80s before Jordan, even while Jordan was existing. It's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Watching that doc and watching Michael play. And I think, you know, the analytics people always kind of look at the mid-range jumper as this just awful shot, you know, but I think that's probably more often than not the shot that's most available to players in the playoffs and in big moments. So Michael dominating from those spots throughout his career, I think really painted his career in a way that, you know, he made it so that he was going to be dominant no matter the setting, because those shots that even modern defenses will want to give up, well, he was killer at them. So it didn't, like, even if he played, if you dropped him in the league right now, he would be just as, if not more dominant, as he was back then. Not because of like the whole, I hate that bullshit about like, if guys were allowed to hand check, if just don't play physically or whatever, that's all bullcrap. But when you actually think about Michael having modern space and then being quote unquote forced into the kinds of shots that he was really comfortable taking, I don't think there is a way to guard him in today's game.
It was similar to Kawhi. Kawhi has his dribble pull up going right, where there's really not much you can do about the shot. With
you got to hope he misses.
Like Jordan's fadeaway from the post was that type of shot, and it still would be, right? Like even if you sent the double team, he'd just turn over the shoulder where the double team wasn't coming from, and you had to hope he missed it. Now it's an enormously difficult shot, but he had mastered it and perfected it to the point where there was a certain inevitability to him taking those shots that even in the modern game, if you throw the ball into Jordan, 17 feet away from the basket and need to get a bucket, he would have been able to shoot that same shot. Cause there's, at his size, with the size of his hands, with him fading away, there just wasn't a whole lot that you could do about that. And that would be as true today as it was then.
Yeah. It's just like my Euro stumble, really. Like there's a sense of inevitability. Go into that move and you just got to hope I miss,
That's right. That's right.
Let's take a quick second here. When we come back, we're going to answer more of the iTunes mailbag questions. And then, we'll weave in some of the questions that we threw out there on Twitter. All right, so the first question here comes from, or the first iTunes question here comes from Saul the Kid. Recently, you mentioned how ice cold Saša Vujačić was when he hit those free throws against the Celtics in 2010. Every time you meet a Celtics fan, you have to tell them that Saša beat them in 2010 finals. Apparently, I forgot how to read over the weekend. Celtics reactions to being told that Saša beat them is amazing. Anyway, how much of a difference do you think it would have made to Kobe's legacy if he never tore his Achilles? Do you think they win the championship that year?
If in 2013, no, I don't. I think that team had some foot speed problems. We just recently did a pod where we went over that season a bit, and I think that it was a fundamentally flawed roster on some levels, despite the individual talent. I just think they were a little on the slow side and the spacing was poor. That's one thing actually from breaking down the 2010 series for The Athletic, as I have been, those lineups that had both Bynum and Artest in them really struggled offensively because the spacing was poor. And the same was true with Artest and with Dwight. And we were, starting to make our way a little more into the stretch four type era where that was exploited even more, right? As teams understood how to really, the illegal defense rule in 2001 took about a decade for teams to understand how to zone up on the weak side defensively and basically take away what they wanted to take away without giving up wide open shots on the weak side. And so I just don't think that team had enough athleticism and foot speed to be able to win a title, especially with D'Antoni as the coach. If Phil was there, I'd be intrigued, but I just don't think that team could have done it.
I'm dying over here.
Yeah, what's going on?
I get these like random sneeze attacks that are super cool to go through, especially while you're on a mic. But yeah, does Kobe's legacy get affected if he doesn't tear his Achilles there? Man, I'm trying to find a way to say this that does not come off asshole-ish. But so much of Kobe's mythology is like him making those free throws on that torn Achilles is such a pivotal moment to the way that a lot of people look at Kobe. So I don't know that Kobe could have done more in the following years if he doesn't tear his Achilles there to affect his legacy, the way that him making those free throws on a torn Achilles made his legacy that night.
I mean, we knew Kobe was a tough guy, man. Like,
that's borderline insane. Like, you look at the other guys who have torn their Achilles, they go down like they're shot, and he makes it. He gets that and then makes two free throws on it and walks off of the court under his own power. Like, that was psychotic behavior, and I think for a lot of people, like, that was it. That's it. That's
he was hero. Also that's he Kobe. Was also. He was also playing like top three in the league type basketball for a long stretch.
Yeah.
And I would have liked to see, like, you know, if he's still a top five NBA player that next year, if he doesn't tear his Achilles, which I think was totally plausible. I think, you know, I think he at least has a chance to now, you know, Dwight probably still walks. It would have been interesting to see how they construct the roster, but I do think that I would have loved to see Kobe staying relatively healthy.
I think he ages well, though, right? He was skilled enough and big enough to age gracefully.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
So that would have been interesting to watch, is like him age under his own volition. That would have right. that I want that we were robbed of in a way that yeah. that really kind of blows.
Yeah.
Let's go. The next question here comes from a fellow Anthony WP9 writes WP9. What do you think WP9 is?
I have no idea.
Hey, Anthony and Pete, have you ever thought of bringing in fans for a short segment, especially with this coronavirus and the lack of things to talk about? Maybe it might be interesting. Not sure about the logistics behind it, since this isn't a live show on the radio, but would be cool nonetheless. Thank you. Not my deal. I don't know.
Yeah, man, that's your call, man.
Well, like the thing, and I'm not. Now, this is going to sound like me shitting on everybody who does this on the radio, but I want to create the content for you, right? Mm-hmm. And like, if we bring guests on here and they start creating the content for themselves, what am I here for? You know, who knows?
Sure.
Although we're doing this during a mailbag, or we're answering this question during a mailbag episode, so whatever.
I was going to say, yeah, they are. Yeah. I got no problem with it, but I could go either way.
Yeah. Jacob Rude on Twitter writes, what are your more embarrassing athletic moments aside from the Euro stumble, Anthony? That's not...
Yeah.
God damn it.
Go ahead, defend yourself, Anthony.
I'm not... Well, there is no defending me. You just got to hope I miss a shot. But I want to be able to make that specific shot on camera again, but I don't think, even if I made it, I don't think it would matter. Like, all that matters is that clip is all that matters. There is nothing. I've been memed to the end of the earth here from this shot. So I don't think there is a more embarrassing moment of my athletic career.
Yeah. I mean,
other than our games of ping pong against each other.
Yeah. I'm thinking, I don't know if I have like an embarrassing, there was one time. So I went to in middle school, I went to two of my better friends in middle school ended up being Division I, like Pac-12 defensive ends in football. And I was a little guy. I was a little nugget, you know, in middle school. And Matt Leonard, I hope Matt Leonard's doing well. He turned out to be like a Hollywood stuntman. Matt was Samoan. And he was 6'4", 250 in like eighth grade. He was ended up playing defensive end at Stanford, and he went to training camp for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Right, just this like elite athlete. He was like the second fastest kid at school.
Yeah.
While just this massive guy. Right, and I remember it had just rained, and he was very playful, really funny guy. And anyway, we're playing football during lunch, and it had rained the day before. And he was like, you know, 10 times faster than me and 10 times bigger than me, right? So anyway, I caught a pass and he had me in his sights. And so it was like very humorous, right? Like this very David Goliath type thing. And so he runs up to me and he would do stuff like this all the time, right? Because the size discrepancy, I'd be talking to a friend and all of a sudden Matt Leonard has scooped me up and I'm like, like against my will. Dude, right?
I can't
and,
imagine things that would piss you off more than me.
Yeah, knowing me, right? Yeah, I'd be like, someone tried to do that in a not, sorry, when I was a freshman in high school, someone tried to do that that I didn't know. They were trying to trash can the small freshman, and I bit him on the fucking collarbone, like just above I ripped the skin off. But I didn't end up in that fucking trash can, I tell you that right now. And no one else ever fucked with me again, tried to do that stuff.
I love you so much, Pete. That's so
amazing. No, man, when you're a little guy, you can't put up with people's bullshit like that. But Matt was the home, right? Like, that was our, like, it was a friendly thing with me and Matt. Anyway, I catch his pass, and he's kind of like zeroing in on me from like the safety position or whatever. And I know I'm like dead to right. Like, there's no point in.
Yeah.
And also, again, it's wet on the grass. It had rained the day before. So he's running up really aggressively, and he tries to slow down, but his feet slip because.
Oh, no.
And so he lands on top of me. And the grass was kind of longish, right? He lands on top of me and pancakes me. So he's like directly on top of me, and I'm on my back. And I hear and feel like every vertebrae crack in my back. Like when you get a really good back
crack. You thought you died.
I thought I died, right? And so he gets up like, oh, no, Pete, you okay? You okay? And I'm like splattered on the grass. And when I got up again, because it was wet and the soil beneath the grass was moist too, when I got up, it was like a chalk outline in the grass. You could see the figure of my body, like the outline of it, like with my arms spread out. And so, yeah, there have been a couple of experiences I've had where it wasn't so much as embarrassing, but like, oh yeah, this person is a D1 level athlete, or I've played against a couple pros before, where it is very apparent that like I do not belong, you know, like from an athletic standpoint to them. So those are some of my, like, I got dunked on one time on a lob on like this like 6'10" guy, right? Caught a lob on me and sprawled me out. But I mean, I'm not embarrassed. I didn't rise up to get that, right? But yeah, those are my moments.
Dude, you're a rim protector. You're built just like a rim protector.
Hey, baby, if I don't get it like waist level or beyond, it's all you guys, right? Yeah.
I guess I have two that I will talk about after the break. So my first one, at one point in my life, I swear to God, you guys, I was actually athletic. Like at one point, like I have dunked on somebody before. Like that is a thing that happened at one point in my life.
On how high are rims?
Huh?
On how high are rims?
5.5.
Okay.
No, yeah. Full regulation rim.
You've dunked on a full regulation rim.
Yeah, I used to, yeah.
Stop.
I swear to God, you don't believe? No, I swear to God. You could ask my wife. This is the one time where Jen can step in here and make me look good, other than like walking around with me in public. But like, I've actually done that. I actually dunked. Now, So I've dunked twice. The one time I, you know, just by myself, right, rised up and was able to just like rim graze it. But this other time when I dunked on somebody, they jumped at the same time I was jumping and knocked me up a bit. So, like, it looked awesome. It was incredible. But you know, Okay. Actually happened. Fuck you, Pete.
I believe you. I believe that it happened. I just believe that it was at, you know, Pear Blossom Elementary School with them old 8-foot.
No,
rims,
man. I was like I said, I was asked
Anthony,
to walk
you're like 5'7". You're
no,
like
I'm not. 5'9". I'm 5'10".
Like
I'm 5'10". I can, yeah.
Oh, you get like 3 inches of vertical in your
chest. Yeah, no, I'm round.
There's no way. I know you're round, but there's no. I don't believe it.
Nope. All right. I don't know if there's a way to prove this, but at some point, I was able to do this. Like I can bring Jen on here, and
I want to see you. I want to see you do a max vert jump, right? Like get a running start.
Why now?
Throw your hands up and all. Do it now, and we can adjust for any additional weight, right? Like,
but there's lot of additional weight. Is
I
the
get
problem.
It. There's a right, but like, okay. Do you think you can get like halfway up the net?
If I was given. Fuck. And now I'm going to write a check that like I can't.
There's no way you dunked. There's no way you dunked on a 10-foot hoop.
I definitely did. There's no, like, now I sound so lame because I'm like defending the fact that
I just have to see some approximation of this where, like, all right, Anthony, you know, 50 pounds ago was doing this.
I could very easily jump up and hang on the rim. Like, that was a very easy thing for me. Like, I could do that vertically. That was an easy thing. Okay. So, but anywho,
All right, tell your tall tale. Let's hear it. My tall tale.
I like how we're doing what should have been embarrassing.
You're like, oh yeah, the embarrassing. Yeah, that one time I dunked on somebody. Yeah, let me tell you that story.
Defending myself doing this or dunking at one point in my life is way more embarrassing than anything I've ever done. So. I remember in middle school, there was like that one, there was one set of baskets that were low enough to be able to dunk on, like for everybody to be able to dunk on. But I took off basically from the key line and it was raining. So I was trying to get up off the ground, but I stepped on the key line and slipped because it was really,
oh yeah, those get slick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And like damn near concussed myself, probably did actually concuss myself. So that was an actual thing that happened. Hold on. Jen's outside right now. Jen, come here.
Yes.
Come here.
What?
Pete doesn't believe that I was ever physically capable of dunking.
I mean, he's only ever talked about it.
Oh my God.
Oh, yes! Yes! Yes!
You've seen me jump up and grab the rim. I did that pretty easily.
A little lowered rim.
Oh my God. This is.
I knew it!
This surprise doesn't count.
Yes!
We're getting a divorce.
I keep the kid.
Hold on, I gotta put my headphones. I unplugged my headphones. Oh,
God damn it, Jen.
Oh, that made my night. Oh, God, that was fucking perfect.
She's the worst.
Let's just end the show there. Let's just end the show.
Yeah, we've
been listening to Locked On Lakers?
Yes. I love my wife so much. We have 5 more minutes. We have to do 5 more minutes.
Oh, okay, okay.
Damn it, Jen.
All right, I'm just going to bask in that. You go ahead and finish the show. Oh, I'm having a drink. That was spectacular.
For those of you listening at home, Pete's smoking his cigarette right now and just made a sandwich for himself. Like great. That was, yeah. Damn it, Jen. Anywho, so my first most embarrassing moment, other than right now, actually, this is like as embarrassing as this could have possibly been.
It's great. It's very like meta, right? Like, what's the most embarrassing sports moment you've ever had? I'm going to make it for you right now on the air. You're saying you want to create the content for the listeners, but you just did the shit out of that, Anthony. Well done.
This is the best segment we've ever done. All right. There's another, like, I got dunked on one time by some guy who was playing at Cal State Fullerton. I was guarding him and he like drove into the key and he rised up and then I rised up as well. His elevator got off a few stories mm-hmm. higher than mine. And it would have been bad enough if I just got dunked on, but it was in front of a bunch of people because it was at the beginning of the semester and they had just opened up this rec center that they had there. And then on top of that, the ball went through the basket and hit me in the face.
No, so, yeah, nice, nice.
So it was just, it could not possibly have gone worse. Though again, like, it, you know, the moment that we just had a second ago is way more embarrassing than anything else. Let's go one more question here. Captain Matt writes, hey, Anthony, I have 2 questions for Pete and you. Do you guys think Phil Jackson will get a statue at Staples Center? Also, if Phil did get a statue during the LeBron Lakers era, how do you think LeBron would react about that? Do you think Phil should at least get a jersey retired, right? He got five titles.
Yeah, that's an interesting. I mean, Pat Riley isn't up there. Riley won four, I think. I think that Phil should be honored. I think his statue takes it probably one step too far, right? Like, you've got the jersey retirement is for, you know, Hall of Fame caliber Lakers who contributed significantly to a multitude of championships. The statues are for the gods, right? Like, of which Phil is one, but he's not a, like, Phil is, and yeah, Phil is kind of one of the Laker guys. I don't know, but he's not Magic. He's not Shaq. He's not Kareem, right? Like,
not Chick.
Right. Even Elgin Baylor, right? Elgin, I'm so glad Elgin Baylor got it because he was one of those guys that
Elgin Baylor Jordan has a of.
Yeah, statue? Remember they did a statue for Baylor a couple of years ago. Remember that?
I didn't know that. I've never seen the Elgin Baylor statue.
It's relatively new. It's within the last couple of years. Okay. So yeah, those guys that are kind of the gods of and again, there's an argument to be made for Phil. It just feels like that's probably one step beyond it, but like a retired jersey or something of that level of honoring him, I do think that that's appropriate, and I'd like to see that.
Yeah, I think if the whole Mike D'Antoni thing, which you and I have at this point covered pretty extensively, a lot more extensively than I ever thought we would talk about that. I think if none of that happens, Phil probably has a statue. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'd be fine with him getting a statue. I'd like a statue with him, you know, his pinkies in his mouth whistling, you know, you know, making, you can't do the triangle because it would look like Illuminati. So like, it's kind of hard to, it's kind of difficult to do that, but, but some kind of a statue where he's like whistling or something like that. The dude won five championships and like, it's not like Staples Center is at a lack for space around its perimeter, right? So you could do a Riley one, you could do a Jackson one, and be perfectly fine. I'd be cool with him getting a statue. And really, given, like, I think now that the Mike D'Antoni thing actually happened, they probably owe it to him because they embarrassed him publicly through that thing. So, like, make, you know, mend those bridges as best you can and try to make that thing work. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Before we go, I've been kind of debating whether or not I was going to do this, but I am going to wind up doing this. I did this for Silver Screen's show yesterday, and I'm going to send that same message out there again today. I had a buddy take his own life over the weekend, and you know, it was an accidental thing, which makes it feel really, really wasteful. But I just want you guys to know, you know, I'm sure for a lot of people, a lot of people have lost their jobs. You know, you're going through a tough time, probably physically in terms of your sickness. You're probably stressing out about a bunch of stuff. We aren't able really to come in contact with each other the way that we normally do. So it's pretty easy to feel like you're alone. And I'm going to use this platform that we have kind of built for ourselves to send a note out there for everybody who feels like you're going through that. You're not alone. And the world is better here with you as a part of it. Jesse, I'm going to miss you a ton. We grew up playing basketball together. I think we played on the same team from sixth grade to senior year. So I'm going to miss you a ton, bud. This whole thing really fucking sucks. It's been a really difficult weekend. And if you guys are going through stuff like this too, just reach out, man. Just reach out to somebody who can remind you how important you are, because a day like this comes for those who care about you. And it's the kind of thing that you never really get over. So even more so than usual, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. Be safe out there. I'm talking to you tomorrow.